This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network. Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 418. Kind of have a mixed bag of topics for you. I want to say something about a couple of guns that I recently had a chance to shoot, a couple of new guns on the market. Got a little bit to say about the tragic loss of Bob Owens from the Bearing Arms website and organization, and a few other things I'll be throwing in there. So thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the last three episodes with three excellent interviews. If you haven't had a chance to listen to all of those, Gail Pepin did a great interview with me on women in concealed carry. Gabe Suarez did a fantastic interview with me on a couple of new products and things that he's got out, and Cheryl Todd before that also talked a little bit about women in concealed carry. And hopefully you guys have gotten a chance to catch up. As I mentioned before, this podcast, at least for a while, is coming out every 2 weeks instead of every week. I appreciate your patience on that. With so much stuff that I have going on, it kind of fits my schedule better, and it gives me the ability to continue to put out good content, and not just put out a show just to put out a show, but to put out something that is going to be relevant and make sense to you, because you're the listener. You're valuable to me. I don't do this podcast just to, you know, stroke my ego or listen to myself talk. You know, I get enough ego boost, I guess, from my real job, you know, in sales, and I've been doing real well lately the last 3 or 4 months, so that's been kind of pumping me up a little bit. I just do this because it's something that I like to do, and it's just simply an enjoyable thing that this Yankee with a gun gets a chance to do. Yes, I live in Texas, but I'm originally a Yankee, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin. Now, guess what? Living in the great gun-friendly state of Texas. Actually, I've been living here longer than I actually lived in Wisconsin. Well, actually, I've been living out of Wisconsin longer than I actually lived in Wisconsin, but I still call America's Dairyland, I still call that my home, because that's where I grew up. It's where I went to school. It's where I went and made lifelong friends. So let's get started with the very first topic and first segment of the show. Okay, this segment of the show comes to you from the Handgun World Mobile Studio. I'm on a short trip, and I want to give you some thoughts of mine regarding the suicide of Bob Owens of Bearing Arms. By the time you hear this, it will be a couple of weeks after that. Right now, it's only a couple days after that. And, you know, this hit pretty close to home for me. Not because I knew Bob. I didn't know Bob. I never met him. Read some of his work. It hit close to home to me, because that's how I lost my dad. Some of you may remember that, may remember me talking about that in previous episodes. My dad, Mike Main, was an Army veteran from the Vietnam era. And my dad had PTSD when he came home. And this is 1975. I was only 14 years old when this happened. You know, they didn't know much about PTSD back then, or if they did, it was just something you didn't talk about, you didn't get treatment for, and you just didn't go there for a lot of veterans. And he didn't. He didn't take the medication that they wanted him to take. He didn't go to the counseling that they wanted him to go to. My dad could have got a lot of help. So my dad came to the same desperate reality that a lot of people Not just ex-veterans, or, you know, but it happens. It happens to veterans, but it happens to lots of people. They come to the reality that life's just not worth living. For whatever reason, and there's plenty of help out there. And so, what a tragedy this is, and it really, like I said, is a little personal for me. And I just want to say, if you are listening to this, if you listen to my show, and there are times where you just, you know, you just feel like you just can't cope. You just mentally can't cope. There's no shame in that, folks. We do need to remove the stigma of there being some shame in that. There's not. There's no shame on that. Contact me personally if you need somebody to talk to. Lord knows many of you who are listening to this have been there for me on many occasions, for many things that I've gone through in my life. I will be there for you. Send me an email, bob@handgunworld.com. Or call my voicemail and just say, hey, Bob, this is obviously not for publication on the show, but would you call me? I need to talk to you. And, of course, the voicemail number is 210-646-1727. Please, don't do it to your family by taking your own life. I'm one of those family victims. I was barely 14 years old. And you know what? No, actually, I was less than that. I was between 13 and 14. Oh, man, it was hard. It was hard. I mean, it was really, really hard. If it was not for my strong mother, my mother was real, real strong. And she basically kept me and my brothers from falling off the edge, really. There's hope for you, folks. There's hope for you if you are in that situation. Once again, I have to say, there is no shame in admitting that you mentally just can't do it anymore. Even with the stuff that I have to deal with, which is nothing close to depression. I don't deal with that, thank God. But the other stuff that I have to deal with, there are times, ladies and gentlemen, plenty of times, I have to tell you, there are plenty of times that I do think, oh, you know, I just can't go on. Now, I never get to the point where, please don't get scared, folks. I don't get to the point where I'm thinking about suicide or anything like that. That's not the case. But there are times that sometimes I just think about quitting everything I do, because it's all way too overwhelming. And then I know that that's not the answer. I'm a strong man of faith, a Christian, most of you know, so I pray during those times. I pray during those times, and I usually get my answer. In fact, I've always gotten my answer. And the answer is always, Bob, don't quit. And if you need help, there are people who will help you. And I've reached out to people for help. Guess what? They helped me. And it made a huge difference. Please, I'm begging you, please. Whatever kind of help you need, please seek it. Please get it. It is there for you. Especially those of us in the firearms community. We're such gracious people. Honest, salt of the earth people. I'm continually amazed every day by the quality of the people in the firearms community. Many of you I've gotten to know real closely, and others not. Others, I would love someday to meet every single podcast listener I have. I know that that's probably not realistic, but that'd be kind of cool. But those of you who have gotten to know me personally, you have been there for me when I needed it. And I thank you. I thank you. And I want you to know, for any of you, or even those of you I don't know that well, even if I am just a voice that you listen to once a week or once every couple weeks, talking about guns, even if that's the only way you know me, I'll still talk to you. I'll still help you out. I consider you my friend. Some of you have sent me emails saying, Bob, I've never met you. We've never met in person. But I listen to you every single week. And I feel like you're part of my family. And I can't tell you how much how good that makes me feel. So if you consider me part of your family and you need someone like a family member to talk to, please get in touch with me. Suicides, most of them can be prevented. It's unfortunate. It's a preventable thing. Most of the time. In fact, I'd say probably in 98% of the time, it can be prevented. Please do that. Please reach out. Does it sound like I'm begging you to reach out? Well, you're right. I am. I'm begging you. I'm begging you to please do it. And get and ask for help. Thank you.
Hey, this is Paul Lathrop from the Polite Society podcast. You know, a long time ago, I was looking for a tactical mall ninja podcast, and I fell upon this one, and I like this much better. You're listening to Bob Main and the Handgun World podcast, a practical show for a practical guy like me.
Okay, in this segment, I want to talk about some guns I recently had a chance to shoot, and I want to do kind of a brief review on them. The M&P 2.0, I finally got a chance to shoot that thing, and the new Beretta APX, and a couple of things on that that I want to talk about, because they're both pretty interesting guns. Some definite advantages on both of them, but then some things that are a little confusing to me. But anyway, I'm going to give you my initial thoughts. These were not 500 round testing sessions. Some students brought them to a class that Ben and I recently taught up in Dallas, and we got a chance to shoot those. So I'm going to cover that. I also want to remind you that, speaking of classes, we still have some room for our Illinois-Wisconsin class that Gary Doherty from the Firearms Institute is hosting. I'd say it's probably about half full right now. So if you're planning on attending that on the end of June or in the end of June and joining us up near the Illinois-Wisconsin border, don't waste too much time. Get to handgunworld.com. All the class listings are there. On June 5th, Monday, by the way, we've got quite a few signups for our small 2.5-hour drill and a skill class for only $50. There's a little bit of space left in that one. You'll find that also at handgunworld.com. Okay, so the M&P 2.0. You know, at the end of the class, we were trying out each other's guns. Ben and I like to call it the battlefield pickup. We just couldn't think of a better name for it. And so we even asked students in advance to bring guns that are kind of unique that we could shoot. A lot of really cool, unique guns there. I'll talk about a couple of others. But that's probably the most fun in our entire class, is right at the end for about an hour and a half or 2 hours. We get to just pick up each other's guns and shoot them. And sometimes you get a chance to shoot things that you've never had a chance to shoot before. Well, guess what? I had the opportunity. I had been checking out the M&P 2.0 at gun shops and, you know, racking the slide back and dry firing and getting the feel of it in gun shops. But it's nothing like actually shooting it. So we've got about 20 yards of distance, and we've got a couple of steel silhouettes about 20 yards away. And we were goofing off trying to shoot headshots, which I think that's a good thing to practice. You know, practice your headshots at lots of different distances. So I pick up the M&P 2.0. Now, I had been shooting some other guns. I had been shooting some of the others on there. Ben's 1911. Of course, my Glock 19 with a red dot on it. There was a Springfield XD of some sort there, like a Grip Zone gun. Which, by the way, I had never shot one of those either. I've seen them. Of course, they've been out quite a while, and I've seen plenty of them, but I had never had a chance to shoot one. And we were making headshots with those other guns too. Then I picked up the M&P 2.0. I fired 10 rounds, and I made 8 out of 10 headshots from 20 yards. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. And I think there's a couple reasons for it. Maybe three reasons for it. First of all, the trigger on the M&P 2.0 is really, really improved. I like the trigger. It's not the best striker fired trigger on the market, but I think it's pretty good. And that kind of proved it because, eight out of 10 headshots at 20 yards, that's not too bad. The other, I think, is definitely the grip texture makes a little bit of a difference. You know, the grip texture allows the gun to be more stable in my hand. And when the gun's more stable in my hand, that's going to help improve accuracy. Some people think the grip texture is a little too rough. If it's too rough for you, you can do several things to soften it up a bit. I think if you just shoot it a lot and carry it a lot for a while, it'll probably soften up on its own. I didn't find it to be too rough for me, but some people might think so. I probably would not carry that gun if I owned one without an undershirt because it is a little too rough to rub against my skin, but I always wear undershirts anyway, even when it's over 100 degrees in Texas. I still wear an undershirt of some kind. Obviously in the heat, a little bit lighter undershirt, but I wear one. So then the other thing I think that really helped on that pistol is most of the 2 days I was shooting guns with a shorter sight radius. And of course, you know, the longer sight radius of the M&P 2.0 compared to a lot of the other guns that I was shooting, that also made a huge difference. And of course, you know, M&Ps are just so natural. They have such a natural point of aim and everything. It was a lot of fun to shoot. I was very impressed. I was very impressed being able to make those headshots. I did a little bit of speed shooting with it. Same distance, silhouette, center of mass. I wanted to see how fast I could pull the trigger and make hits. I probably shot an entire magazine, all hits. So, you know, good gun. I'm impressed with the M&P 2.0. I really am. And I think it's definitely a winner. You know, there are some shortcomings that it has, but what gun doesn't have shortcomings? I think the front cocking serrations are kind of a joke. They're so small, and the way they're positioned, it's kind of weird and kind of a joke. I don't think they really do much of anything. So I think Smith & Wesson put those on there just so they could say it has front cocking serrations. If they really meant for those to be useful, I think they would have designed them a little bit differently. Okay, the Beretta APX. Now, this is another one that I had actually never seen one. So this was the first time I was seeing one and shooting one, and I got to shoot it. So here's my thoughts on the Beretta APX. You know, it's the size of a Glock 17. So this is definitely not a deep concealment gun. Now, if you're used to shooting and carrying something like a Glock 17 or a full-size service pistol of that type, of that size, then you'll like the Beretta APX. The ergonomics of it is great. I think the ergonomics of the APX is better than the M&P 2.0. I do really like the sort of flat face trigger on the APX. That's nice. You know, one of the great advantages of a flat face trigger is that, you know, you can get more finger on the trigger. And for me, it really seems to improve the trigger pull for me because I'm getting more of my finger on that trigger. And there's more space there for me. It sort of seems like it gives me a little bit more leverage, so to speak. And I really like the big mag release button on the APX, and it doesn't get in the way. But the actual trigger, not just the shape of the trigger, but the actual trigger press, I did not think was as good as the M&P 2.0. Believe it or not. And of course, we all know, for those of you that love Apex triggers, you can put that in your M&P 2.0. I don't doubt that Apex will probably come out with a trigger for the Beretta APX. But the trigger pull was a little weird on the Beretta. Both of them are nice triggers, but the reset point was a little weird, and it just the APX trigger seemed a little spongy to me. Where that's one thing I got to compliment the M&P 2.0. No sponginess in that trigger, not like the old M&Ps. Crisp, clean break. A little spongy on the APX, and that was kind of irritating. Perhaps I could get used to it, but it was a little irritating. The texture on the APX is nice, on the Beretta APX is nice. And by the way, I believe this is Beretta's first striker-fired pistol. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it is. They've done a good job. They've put their homework into it. They've put a lot of thought into it. The texture's great, not too aggressive. It's nice. Now, one thing about the APX, the slide serrations on top, on the sides of the slide, that's really cool the way Beretta has it. I'll put a picture of the Beretta APX in the show notes, as well as the M&P 2.0. Take a look at what I'm talking about. Take a look at the picture of the Beretta APX. Well, I had a chance to manipulate that slide. And whether you're trying to get a grip from under the gun in the front of the slide or back of the gun, rear of the slide, there's no way that you're not going to be able to get a good grip on the Beretta APX slide. So that I really, really liked. The APX is not much for looks. If you like a good looking gun, the M&P 2.0 is going to look a lot better than the APX. But I don't give a rip about looks. I don't care how a pistol looks. I don't care where it's made. I don't care who owns it. Who manufactured it. I don't care about any of that stuff. If it's a good gun, if it can save my life, that's all that matters to me. I don't get hung up in all that, where is it made and what kind of company owns it and what did the company do and what's the manufacturer's politics and what's their lawsuits and blah, 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 blah. I think that's all nonsensical stuff that a lot of us, talk about too much. Would you agree? Let's just worry about whether the pistol works, whether it's reliable and whether it works and whether it can save your life. Both of these guns were reliable. Now, I didn't do a several hundred round test. A couple of magazines, that was it. That's all I shot through both of these guns. But all indications are they are both very reliable. Now, on both of these guns, I'm not crazy about the shape of the sights. Now, the sights are good. The sights are good. Both have good sights on them. You know me, I like to have a rear sight that has a little bit of a ledge to it. The M&P does not. Not really. Not much. Very, very, very small ledge that makes it really hard to rack off of your belt or off of your holster or a table or something other than using your other hand to rack the slide in case you have to do that. Folks, sometimes you might have to manipulate your gun one-handed. You need to practice that, but you also need to have a gun with a rear sight that makes that as easy as possible. And neither one of these had a rear sight that made that really easy. The Beretta APX's rear sight is probably a little bit better suited for that, I think, than the sight on the M&P. Let's see. Beretta advertises that their trigger breaks at 6 pounds and that it has a short reset. I would say so, yeah, but the reset just feels weird. I don't know. The reset on the M&P 2.0 was a lot better, and that probably has a heavier trigger. I bet that's about a 6.5 pound trigger on the M&P. I didn't get a trigger gauge out and measure them, but I'll bet that's probably about what it is. What's cool, I think, is that the Beretta does come with 3 interchangeable back straps. 3, not just 2, but 3. Yeah, that's kind of good. I like that. But I'm really impressed. I'm really impressed with the slide serrations. And of course, both of them have a magazine release button that can be easily reversed. So no problem. For you left-handers, both of them have a very easily reversed magazine release button. By the way, Smith & Wesson has gone to a steel mag release button instead of the plastic one on the version 1. added durability, I guess. I had no complaints. I don't have any complaints about the lack of auto forward. I mean, MMP got rid of that. You know, most of you that are MMP shooters, you know that, you know, all you got to do is insert that magazine with some authority when you do a reload, and the slide automatically goes forward on the old M&Ps. Doesn't happen on the M&P 2.0. Smith & Wesson decided to get rid of that. I don't care too much about that. I don't care too much about that. That's just not important to me. What is important to me is the shootability of the gun. And the M&P 2.0 is very shootable. Both of them and the Beretta APX. I couldn't make as many headshots with the Beretta. Not quite sure why. I didn't make 8 out of 10. I think it was 4 or 5 at 20 yards with the Beretta. Now, one last thing I want to talk about them. The M&P is lighter. The M&P is about 24.7 ounces. The Beretta is heavier, about 28. So, if those are unloaded weights with a magazine in them. So, if that's important to you, which it is to me, weight is everything. If this was going to be a carry gun, if this was going to be like a full-size carry gun for me, I'd probably go with the M&P 2.0. I do want to shoot a Beretta APX more. I do want to shoot one more before, you know, giving a complete review on it. I've shot M&Ps a lot, and I just noticed some significant improvements from 1.0 to 2.0. Oh, by the way, Smith & Wesson did get rid of the beaver tail on the M&P, which I think is good. I think is good. That, you know, I didn't think it was necessary, because even though it's got kind of a low bore axis, it's not low enough to where it's going to give you slide bite. I don't think it ever has been, and it certainly is not now. Same with the Beretta APX. It's kind of got a little small beaver tail, but not much. Not like the old version of the M&Ps. Again, I think unnecessary features. Now, if you're a Glock shooter and you got big meaty hands, the Generation 4s, you pretty much had to get those because, you know, you got the beaver tail backstrap with it, and a lot of people got slide bite with the Glocks if you have hands that are that way. Not mine. I don't get slide bite with the Glocks. Okay, that's it, folks. That's kind of my brief review of the 2.0 and the APX. You know how I don't like to get really super, super detailed unless I've had a chance to, you know, spend a lot of time shooting these, but those are my initial impressions after shooting a couple of magazines through each one of them. Just a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Hey, gang, this is Masad Ayoub from the Pro Arms Podcast. I'm here to remind you that our podcast is a member of the Self-Defense Radio Network, and I'm going to suggest you do what we do and check out the other podcasts at selfdefenseradio.net.
All right, next, I had to take a break because I had to take a trip in the Handgun World mobile studio. I had to sit in the Handgun World dungeon for a while, which is my office, and I had to sit behind this electronic box with a keyboard on it that is commonly called a computer. And I had to get some business done for my real job, because you folks don't pay me enough to do this podcast full time. So that's why I had to take that break. So the next topic that I want to cover, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag show here. Every once in a while, I put out these mixed bag shows. I want to discuss so far to date my experience with my red dot pistol, my Glock 19. Glock 19 with a Trijicon RMR 07 red dot. You know, I'm still getting used to it. I still don't feel comfortable enough to carry it 100% of the time in my holster as my personal self-defense weapon. I got to put more time in it. I will say this, if you're going to carry a red dot pistol, please get some training on how to use it. You know, take a course specifically, for example, on red dot pistols. That was huge for me. Spending 3 days and 800 rounds. And that's nothing, folks. 800 rounds, that's nothing. You're barely getting to know how to use it at that point. But it was an eye-opener. A lot of people say, well, it slows you down at shorter distances. Maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. I don't know. It seems to maybe slow me down a little bit at close distances. And I'm talking about, like, you know, inside of 7 yards. So what I'm going to do is, yeah, I'm going to test this for a year at least before I decide to carry a red dot pistol full time. The way I'm going to test it is, I think this Saturday, which is going to be the day before you hear this podcast, I'm going to go shoot IDPA with a regular iron sighted pistol. And then the next time I go shoot competition, I'll probably shoot AASA, American Action Shooting Association. And I'll probably shoot that match with my red dot. And I'll compare my times and I'll compare my results. You know, that's one great thing about competition matches is you've got targets at different distances. So you can see what your equipment will enable you to do or not do at the different distances. I'll try to take another class, another red dot class, if I can find one in the next year or so. And, you know, of course, I will be podcasting the results and talking to you guys all about it. If you remember several weeks ago, a couple months ago, when John and Dean and I took the red dot pistol class, I believe we did an entire episode. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did an entire episode on our review on that class. So if you're thinking, well, should I spend the money? You know, that's entirely up to you. Nobody can tell you how to spend your own money. I would just make this suggestion to you. I would not spend the money if you're not going to immediately take a class on it or start competing with it and accept the fact that there's going to be a learning curve. If you're not willing to accept that, if you're going to spend the money to put a red dot on your pistol, a slide-mounted red dot, and you're going to think it's going to instantly improve your shooting, please don't do that. That's going to be a waste of money. I would hate to see you do that. Because I tried shooting several red dot pistols before I actually decided to buy one and take the class. And the only reason that I bought a Trijicon RMR and put it on top of one of my Glock 19s. The only reason why I had Juarez International do that is because I had planned to take the upcoming class. I would have never done that without taking the class. And I think a lot of the bad feedback that you hear from people about red dot pistols is because they haven't trained or they haven't competed. And when I say competed, I don't mean one or two matches. I mean 40 or 50 or 60 matches and, you know, several thousand rounds. Okay? You know, think about competition shooters. There are a lot of competition shooters that have been competing for years with red dot pistols. And, you know, in the open divisions and things like that. And, you know, I heard Tom Gresham say this the other day, and I think he's right. These guys would not be using anything that's going to slow them down. Now, they're very, very good shooters. But I'll bet that there was a learning curve when they first started it. But they got over that learning curve by practicing and training. They're very, very good shooters. Conversely, new shooters, I mean brand new shooters that are just getting started, oftentimes they do real well with a red dot pistol. Because they don't know anything different. They don't know anything else. They haven't spent 15 or 20 years with an iron-sighted pistol shooting 50 to 100,000 rounds with an iron-sighted pistol. They don't know. They don't know the difference. So, and you know how new shooters are. They'll do whatever you tell them, and they'll usually adapt pretty quickly. So I think the real test of whether a red dot is a viable option on a pistol other than reliability. Of course, reliability is the major test. That's the major test. But secondary, I think you got to look at new shooters. You have to look at new shooters, not just experienced shooters or not just intermediate level or advanced shooters, but you got to look at new shooters. The first time people are picking up or somewhere in the early stages of their shooting, they haven't had much experience. And put a red dot pistol with backup iron sights. Got to have the backup iron sights, folks. That's a must. Have to have the backup iron sights. And put that pistol in their hand. And just tell them. Point that gun at the target. You might see some sights there. And you might see a red dot there. And when the red dot is in the area of the target that you want to shoot, press the trigger. And see what those results are, and then do the same thing with an iron-sighted pistol. And compare those results. I would love to see that. I would love to see somebody do a pretty extensive new shooter test. I'd like to see that. If the test results came out that new shooters sucked with a red dot, if that was the overwhelming consensus of the test, I'm willing to accept that. You know, at the end of the day, if it's proven that red dot pistols suck and that they should not be used for self-defense or as a carry pistol, I'm willing to accept that. But I'm not going to take other people's word for it. And I don't suggest that you do that either. I would suggest that if you're strongly considering a red dot on a pistol, get signed up for a class first, then buy the optic about a couple of months ahead of that class, get familiar with it, practice with it, go take the class, and then continue training and shooting and practicing and competing with it, and make your own decision. Don't say, well, they're no good because so-and-so says that they're no good and so-and-so is real experienced and real well known. How many years and how many episodes now have I been talking on this podcast about the fact that I don't like to give reviews, positive or negative, on guns I haven't shot? I don't like to give reviews, positive or negative, on other products like holsters and belts and ammunition if I haven't used them. I also don't like to give reviews on training classes if I haven't taken a class. If I haven't taken that specific class that I'm reviewing, I'm not going to render an opinion one way or another. Yet I see people do that all the time. Don't take that class from so-and-so because of blah, 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 this, that, and the other thing, A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. When it's perfectly obvious they did not take the class. Now, are there bad classes out there? Yeah. Does that mean that you might spend your money taking a bad class? Sure. But guess what? Even spending your money taking a bad class could be worth it in some ways because you will understand what not to do. And if you're an instructor, you'll understand what not to teach and how not to teach it. And you never know, you still might walk away with one or two good ideas or one or two ways to maybe teach something a little bit differently so that your students will understand it. That's if you're an instructor. And if you're not an instructor and you spend money taking a bad class, okay, chalk it up to experience. But, you know, it's kind of like the episode I did several weeks ago that, you know, we have to stop eating our own gun people. Come on, firearms industry. We got to stop eating our own. We're all in this for the same reason. We all take our Second Amendment rights very seriously. Therefore, we choose to carry a gun every day. We take training and we take guns and products very seriously. We take our gun rights very seriously, don't we? I hope you do. We're all in the same boat. So, this cheesehead from Wisconsin is not going to slam other instructors or slam other products or methodologies or anything like that. Unless this cheesehead has actually gone to those classes and taken them and walked away thinking, you know, that really sucked and it was a waste of time and a waste of money. Or, you know what, I tried that product and it was just a piece of garbage. Then I'm going to tell you about it. Okay, I have to tell you that I've put a couple of new videos up on the Shooters Club. So for all you Shooters Club members, there's two new videos up there. One on safety and one on how to handle your gun and what to do if you find yourself in a crowd and all of a sudden the crap has hit the fan so bad that you have to use your gun. What are you going to do? What are you going to do when there are a lot of innocents around? What are you going to do when you have to take out the threat because maybe they're threatening one of your loved ones that's with you? So check that out. If you're a Shooters Club member, you can find that at shootersclubmembers.com. Just log into your account and you'll be able to view it. And if you're not a Shooters Club member, you know what to do. Get signed up. And June 5th, I think I mentioned this earlier, but I'll mention it again. There is some space left in our drill and a skill class that Ben Branham and I are teaching for 2.5 hours after work on Monday, June 5th. You might want to get signed up for that. And we're just going to be working on the draw and shooting multiple threats, which very important concealed carry skills, the draw and shooting multiple threats. Check all that stuff out at handgunworld.com. My voicemail, 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. I'd love to hear from you. I love getting voicemails. I like getting emails, too. In fact, I'll be probably in the next episode in a couple weeks addressing some real good emails that I've received lately. But sure like those voicemails. So call those in. And, you know, even if you got a question, hey, if you have a disagreement, hey, I don't know everything. I don't know everything. And I like disagreement, actually, because usually if somebody has a disagreement with me and it's well thought out, I learn something from it. So I like it. If it's well thought out. Now, if you just want to disagree with me and just, you know, spew out a bunch of garbage that is inconsequential, that you haven't thought out, and you're just giving out talking points, you know, well, then, yeah, please don't call. But I think one person has done that. And, of course, that person didn't make the show not because they disagreed with me, but it was kind of an incoherent disagreement. And I just didn't want to waste your time and especially mine editing it and putting it out on the podcast feed. So that's pretty much about it, folks. In a couple of weeks, I'll put out another episode. If something really urgent comes up that I feel like I need to talk about, you might get a podcast in between the 2 weeks. You might, you know, get one that weekend in between the 2 weeks, but yeah, probably not. It's probably not going to be all that urgent to where I got to talk about it right now. But thanks for listening, folks. I appreciate it. Thanks for being patient with me as I go through some of the challenges and things that I'm going through and still getting the podcast out. And I hope it's still continuing to be relevant. If you haven't ever given me an iTunes review, I'd love to get that. Go to the Handgun World podcast feed on iTunes, and there's a way there that you can review it. I would certainly like that. Of course, always welcome feedback on the website itself, handgunworld.com. And as I mentioned before, emails, Facebook, Handgun World Podcast on Facebook, Handgun World on Twitter. That's about all I can keep up with.
This is Sean from the Gunblog Variety Cast. Unlike Bob, I was in the military, but that was a long time ago. Now what I need is a practical podcast from a practical guy. That's why I listen to Bob Main's Handgun World Podcast on the Self Defense Radio Network.
That's just about it, folks. I did not get a chance to shoot IDPA because they called the match off due to rain. The IDPA club here in San Antonio that shoots at Cedar Ridge Range, that range gets pretty unsafe when there's a lot of rain. And we really didn't get much rain. We probably could have shot the match, but I guess the forecast threatened to dump a lot of rain on us, and so that match got canceled. So I'll shoot the red dot pistol next Saturday in AASA competition and then try to get the iron-sighted pistol out and shoot IDPA real soon. I'm going to be definitely doing that for a year. I'm going to be rotating back and forth. I'm going to carry an iron-sighted pistol 90% of the time until I'm 100% confident in my abilities and the Trijicon RMR. I tell you what, the Trijicon RMR is got a lot of potential to be my number one carry gun. The Glock 19 with the Trijicon RMR. I just don't have quite enough repetitions with it for my satisfaction. I haven't given that a 1,000 round trigger job. I shot about 800 rounds. I'd prefer to give it a 2,000 round trigger job, make sure everything's okay before it goes into my holster and before I carry it regularly on a regular basis. But hey, I think red dots are going to be the way to go. A lot of people argue about that. Seems like a lot of people are like me. They show a lot of resistance to red dots on pistols. I did. I showed a lot of resistance for 5 or 6 years until I tried it and took a class with it. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, I was disappointed with a red dot on a pistol when I had just occasionally tried it, like, you know, shot a magazine through one. That's you can't just do that and make a judgment. That's not going to work. You have to either borrow one or just take the plunge and buy one and go take a class or do some competing like I've talked about. And then you can make a judgment as to whether it's going to be good for you. Some of the negatives are that, yeah, sometimes the glass can get dirty if you clean it every day. If you clean it every day, it's probably not going to be a problem. And, you know, I every time I touch this red dotted pistol, I clean it. I've got a lens pen and I've got a special rag that I use to clean it. I carry it under a shirt. So, you know, if it's raining or something like that, it's probably not going to get very wet because my shirt is probably going to soak up most of the moisture. And, you know, remember, we got backup iron sights in case the dot doesn't work. That's why you got backup iron sights. So remember that. Remember, iron sights fail too. You know, I've seen a lot of front sights wiggle their way loose and come off of pistols. And what happens if your iron sight has wiggled its way loose and then you draw your gun in self-defense and, uh-oh, your sight's gone? I've seen fiber optic inserts come out of iron sights. I've seen tritium vials come out of iron sights. I've seen rear sights drift left or drift right because, you know, maybe the set screw wasn't in properly or they needed to be Loctited and they weren't. You know, hey, there are a lot of failures with iron sights as well. And it's interesting that a lot of people talk about, well, the failure points of the Trijicon RMR or any kind of a red dot sight. Well, there's failure points on iron sights too. So let's remember that. Okay, folks, that's all I've got for you. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, read your Bible every day and shoot straight and shoot safe. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.